The following podcast contains advertising. To access an ad-free version of the Lawfare podcast, become a material supporter of Lawfare at patreon.com/lawfare. That's patreon.com/lawfare. Also, check out Lawfare's other podcast offerings, Rational Security, Chatter, Lawfare No Bull, and The Aftermath.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, Lawfare listeners. Audio producer Ian Enright here. Want to give a quick disclaimer before this episode of Trump Trials and Tribulations. We had some big tech glitches happening during the recording and live stream today, so you're going to hear some less than ideal quality audio in this episode. We apologize for this, but we promise to get back to pristine audio in the next and upcoming streams. So thank you so much for bearing with us, and thanks for listening.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Trump's Trials and Tribulations New York Trial Dispatch. Today is April 30th, the start of week two. I'm joined, as always, by Benjamin Wittes, our editor-in-chief.
Greeted by sirens, as always.
And Anna Bauer, our courts correspondent and legal fellow, scotch in hand.
Cheers.
Cheers. Though cheers. Tyler has wine.
I have wine.
By the end of this series, Tyler will be drinking scotch.
I have to ease my way into it. Or I'll need to be drinking scotch, I think.
Yes, exactly.
So let's get right into it. Today was the start of week two, and I think there were a few new characters in the courtroom, perhaps one even with sharing DNA with the defendant himself.
Yes, yeah, so Eric Trump was there, who I immediately mistook for Don Jr., which shows how much television I watch. But he was, you know, clearly a Trump, and he was there, and he was sitting next to a older woman whom I could not identify, but was clearly a VIP. And apparently we had some other honored guests today whom I didn't even notice, but Anna has sleuthed out. So who else was there other than Eric?
So Ben was in the courtroom itself. I was in the overflow courtroom, and it was very difficult to tell who was who from the overflow video, but apparently Susie Wiles, who is a big time Trump ally and political operative, was in court today. And you, I believe, saw Susie Wiles speaking to Eric Trump or sitting next to Eric Trump?
Speaking to Eric Trump. They were sitting next to each other all day. And she was, you know, clearly like, well, she was sitting. So the front row of the gallery is reserved for Trump close friends and family. And so usually it's, you know, I don't know, Stephen Chung and, you know, the usual political operatives. But today there had not been family before, at least not that I've seen. But today there was Eric Trump and Susie Wiles. And I hear there was somebody else too.
Yeah, there was also Ken Paxton, who is someone who the current Texas Attorney General
impeached but not removed. Sound familiar?
And before we jump into the action, I understand that there was not only these additions but also another subtraction from the courtroom.
Yeah.
I have one question. Was the dog shirt to blame?
The dog shirt was innocent. There was another eviction of a reporter. I do not know the circumstances of it. This one took place two or three rows in front of me. It involved a face I did not recognize, although judging from the reporters are pretty neatly divided into people who are television people, and you can tell them because they're all made up and they're you know, wearing nice clothes, and then there are the rest of us who were kind of schlubby. And so this was definitely a TV person, and I don't know what she did, but it probably almost certainly involved a cell phone. But the security personnel swooped down on her and said, "Ma'am, step out." And she said, "Excuse me," and like played dumb, or maybe was ignorant of what had happened or whatever. And the guy just said, "Ma'am, step out." And all the security people, you know, descended on her, and she stepped out. And, you know, it's like in 1984 when you get non-personed and disappeared. We don't know what happened to you. You're never heard from again. And so to the anonymous, at least to me, television reporter who has been evicted from the Trump New York trial, may you rest in peace.
So for anyone keeping count at home, that's two reporters now ousted. We're dropping like flies, but let's jump into the action. Anna, kick us off.
Tyler, you can tell us a little bit more about the written order. Wait, because...
But before we do, I have a bone to pick with some people on Twitter, which I'm not on anymore, because I heard while we were walking over here from one Anna Bauer that there were a bunch of people on Twitter who were dragging her for not reporting what was in the order that Justice Merchan issued, because apparently there was some choice language there that she left out, and there were what people were asking, why are you suppressing this? Let me just explain to you, people on Twitter. We were in the courtroom. When you're in the courtroom covering the trial, you're not also reading the orders, because that requires two brains at the same time. So we were there, and Anna correctly tweeted what Justice Merchan said. So your beef is really with Justice Merchan, who wrote some things that he chose not to say to Donald Trump man-to-man in open court. Now, if you've got a problem with that, that's fine. Take it up with Justice Merchan. But Anna actually tweeted what was said in court, which is what we decided we were going to do. And so Tyler, and to my knowledge, Anna has not even read the order yet, neither have I. The one who's read the order is Tyler, who was not in court. So he read the order. That's the way we distribute labor here. So Tyler, what did Justice Merchan do?
I too am single-brained. And so with my one brain, I read the order. To give you a little more detail on the 10 counts, so as Anna said correctly, counts 2 through 10 were Justice Merchan fined Trump for. The first count, which was, I believe, a response. Well, Trump tried to paint it as a response to a, quote, political attack from Michael Cohen. During the contempt hearing, I believe, Justice Merchan kept asking for, substantiation to this claim that they were responses to political attacks. The first count was the only one that Todd Blanche offered two pieces of evidence, not in exhibits, not in filings, but actually verbally in court. Justice Merchan in the orders seemed still very skeptical that this was a response to political attack, and he gave more context to that. But erring on the side of caution, as he's been wont to do, he found it prudent to deny that first.
A lot of the incidents where he's had run into trouble with Justice Merchan are incidents in which he's walking into court and he kind of impulsively says something. And I would check out after he's had a chance to, he won't read the order, of course, but after he's had a chance to digest the conservative media ecosystem's coverage of the order, what he blurts out tomorrow and what he puts out tonight on Truth Social.
I'd also add that something to watch for is anything that he rebleeds, because a big part of the decision and order was Justice Merchan dismantling this argument that reposts of any kind did not represent what Trump himself wanted to say. And I'll just quote him here. The judge said, "Thus, there can be no doubt whatsoever that defendant's intent and purpose when reposting is to communicate to his audience that he endorses and adopts, in italics, the posted statements as his own. He called to otherwise, that would be counterintuitive and indeed absurd." So that was probably some of the choice language. All right. Moving on. So where did we leave off yesterday, and who was our first witness today?
All right.
Oh, sorry, last week and yes. The first witness today.
We left off with Gary Farrow, who is a former banking manager at First Republic Bank.
And who really looks like a bouncer.
Ben thinks that he looks very much like a bouncer. No, he does look bouncery, but not, you know.
Come on, I'm going to stop making fun of him right now because he's actually a super articulate and a smart guy who... he's definitely been, you know, just for the prosecution purposes, he's kind of a dream witness. He doesn't, there's not that much work he can do for them, but boy, did he do the work that he was meant to do well, which was not limited to getting a bunch of documents into the record. It was also sort of telling the story of Michael Cohen interacting with the banking system to get these two LLC bank accounts done. Those people, you want to be as rock solid as possible because Michael Cohen is a freaking loose cannon.
Anna, did anything else jump out at you from his testimony?
No, I think that Ben covered the big points. We had this morning a lot of witnesses that were primarily documents witnesses. And so after Gary Farrow wrapped up was a woman named Rebecca Mangold, who is one of the younger members of the team. And what do you do when you have a documents witness and a relative novice to conducting a criminal trial? You give them the documents witnesses. And so I knew when Rebecca Mangold stayed up at the lectern to call the next witness that it was very likely to be someone who was mostly coming in as a records custodian. And that is indeed what happened. The next witness was a man named Robert Browning.
From
C-SPAN, from Tippecanoe County, Indiana, which some people pointed out to me that it's not Tippecanoe, Indiana, it's Tippecanoe County, Indiana. So my apologies to those from Tippecanoe County, Indiana, for getting that wrong. It's a county, not a city. And so we got the C-SPAN director of archives who came in to basically just authenticate some videos that the prosecution wanted to get into evidence, which is interesting because it indicates to me that the defense did not stipulate to just, you know, letting these videos come in. Often there are stipulations that the parties will make with these things that are clearly, you know, they are actually things that are authenticated. They're pretty clearly business records. The defense usually isn't going to, you know, put up a huge fight about, not stipulating to it just so that the prosecution can subpoena someone to come and authenticate those records and get them in through the rules of evidence, because you kind of have to have a witness come and say like, yes, we keep these in the normal course of business and I produce these in response to the subpoena and blah, blah, blah. But nonetheless, the jury did sit through that process. And I think it was four videos from C-SPAN or excerpts of videos that we got. And it was
really brief ones.
Really brief ones. It was just like little snippets of a video. It's things like Trump saying, you know, he's at speeches back in 2016 saying things like, I didn't know any of these women and they're all fake stories and that kind of thing. And then there's another video in which he described Michael Cohen, for example, as a friend and an excellent attorney. And so, Ben, what do you think the significance of those were?
Yeah, so some of it was you can only entirely understand it with reference to what came next, right? Which is a witness who, from a court reporting firm, with the documents and video of him, his testimony in the E. Jean Carroll case, right? And so first they're showing him indignantly protesting these women who are saying they're all lying, they're all going to be sued, they're all, you know, and then the next document, you know, the next thing is him in, excuse me, in a in a deposition where he actually is sworn to tell the truth, in which he is, you know, a little bit less bombastic about it, right? And but some of it is also that it shows, all of these are showing the level of panic after the Access Hollywood tape in the context of the campaign, just how much he actually felt threatened by this as an electoral matter. And I think that's so if you think about how this evidence is going to be used in closing arguments to the jury, you know, they're going to be able to say, look, he went up there and, you know, in all these things and lied his ass off. But he also turned around and paid them off, right? That he didn't treat them the way you would treat people who were simply, you know, I think like some of it was, you know, is that there's a radical disjuncture between the way he presented himself in these rallies. They're all lying. They're all going to get sued. I've never met any of them. And by the way, they've already presented evidence that, you know, Stormy Daniels was at Trump Tower, right? And they've already presented evidence that he said of Karen McDougal that she's a nice girl, right? And so, you know, I do think this is setting up a close that is contrasting the evidence as presented in court with the things that he was saying. But the second thing, and perhaps the more important thing, is just showing how panicked they were in the last few days of the campaign after the Access Hollywood tape, such that they would pay people off, such that they would do you know, quite reckless things like, oh, say, pay people off and then create a weird scheme to falsify their own business records to cover it up.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Could your political views make you the target of cybercrime, identity theft, stalking, or even violence? I used to think this was silly, and then weird things started happening to me. Someone defaced my car. It had Lawfare license plates on it. Somebody delivered weird antique postcards of Guantanamo Bay to my house. You know, weird stuff. The volume of personal data online has tripled between 2019 and 2023, and angry individuals fueled by political polarization can access it all for up to 98% of American citizens. And I was one of them. Lots of people were using my name, my home address, other information about me to try to intimidate me. And I want to say that has dramatically slowed down in recent months. And one of the reasons is Delete Me. As I have said before, there are products here that I read the ads because, you know, that's my job. And there are products here that I read the ads because I really use them and really like them. And Delete Me is one of the Lawfare advertisers that I am most enthusiastic about. And here's why. It finds and removes personal information I don't want online, and it makes sure it stays off.
It's a subscription service that removes your personal information from all of the largest search databases on the web. And in the process, it helps prevent potential identity theft, doxing, and phishing scams. And here's the important point. It doesn't just do it once, because the information will get back into the systems. It does it, and then it does it again. So the first time I got one of these reports, and they send regular reports at Delete Me, you know, there were a whole bunch of systems that I'd come off of. But then each time I get one now, there's still one or two or three that I'm back on the system and Delete Me has once again deleted me. So sign up and provide Delete Me with exactly what information you want deleted, and their experts will take it from there. And as I say, they send regular personalized privacy reports showing what info they have found, where they found it, and what they removed. It's always working for you, constantly monitoring and removing the personal information you don't want on the internet. When you sign up, they immediately go to work scrubbing all your personal information from data broker platforms. Your personal profile is no longer theirs to sell. So take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me now at a special discount for Lawfare listeners. Today, get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/lawfare20 and use the promo code Lawfare20 at checkout. The only way to get 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/lawfare20 and enter code Lawfare20 at checkout. That's joindeleteme.com/lawfare20, code Lawfare20.
And how did the defense deal with this narrative?
It didn't. Not at all. So it did not seek to lay a glove on the old gentleman who's the archivist from C-SPAN. They did not seek to lay a glove on... They barely tried to do anything with Mr. Farrow, and they didn't try anything either with the other sort of pure document witnesses. That's not the ground on which they want to fight, because these are, you know, wholesome people who are, you know, clearly don't have any kind of vendetta against Trump. They're just custodians of the records of their corporations.
So then moving to the third witness of the day, who I take it was not a document witness. Anna, can you set that up for us?
He was a document witness, among other things.
Yeah, he was a document witness, but he was not just that. He's also a fact witness. It was Keith Davidson, who we've heard about through David Pecker's testimony. Keith Davidson is the entertainment lawyer. I guess that's how you might describe him, as Hollywood entertainment lawyer, who has represented both Karen McDougal and then also Stormy Daniels. Everything that we heard from David Pecker made me think that, like David Pecker, this Keith Davidson character might just, you know, kind of ooze like this persona of like a sleazy Hollywood lawyer, but that's actually not what he gave off at all.
So disappointing.
So Ben, tell us about that.
I mean, look, you have a trial with David Pecker, and he lives up to expectations. I mean,
exceeds them.
And he was just awesome. So you've got David Pecker, and then you've got I've never been to a trial where you've had one lawyer who cuts deals for more than $100,000 for not one, but two people who claim to have had sexual liaisons with a aspiring president of the United States, one of whom is a porn star and the other of whom is a Playmate of the Year. And they're represented by the same lawyer, right? And so you assume that this guy must be the most deliciously sleazy person this side of David Pecker. And he's not. He's just an LA lawyer, does a lot of personal injury work, seems to have had some relationships with people who were connected to these people, so he represented them, and he was kind of boring.
He was a little bit boring, yeah. But there were a lot of things that came out in his testimony that I think were important. He gave a lot of context to, for example, where David Pecker's story ends is in large part with the Stormy Daniels, because Pecker didn't want to be a part of the Stormy Daniels deal. And so we got a little bit of context of like why that was on the AMI side. But especially through Keith Davidson, we got a little bit more about the, you know, exactly what happened with the chronology of how the Stormy Daniels deal itself came about, which is important because that forms the basis of the charges here. And we got a lot that Cohen, you know, will likely testify to, but that the prosecution wants to make sure that they have that those facts also corroborated through another witness as well. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so I think the major importance of Keith Davidson's testimony is that, again, it's this effort to tell as much of the story as you can without Michael Cohen as your narrator. And Michael Cohen is a really, really not great witness. And by the way, one of the things that they've been doing all day today is making fun of Michael Cohen. This is the prosecution.
No, all trial. It's not just today.
Right.
You know, they call him that asshole. They call him, what else do they call him? No one wants to talk to Michael Cohen.
The prosecution put on a witness today. This is their star witness. The prosecution put on a witness that said the moral of the story is nobody wants to deal with Michael Cohen, right? The prosecution put on a witness earlier today and last week who said, the banking fellow, the bouncer, who, you know, basically said every time Michael Cohen got in touch with me, it was an emergency. He said every time Michael Cohen, you know, I was put in charge of the Michael Cohen account because I'm good with difficult people, and everybody thought Michael Cohen's a really difficult person. I actually didn't mind him very much, but the whole assumption is that this is a really difficult individual, and they, you know, did a, you know, they are preemptively controlling for a lot of what the defense is going to be able to adduce from Cohen in cross-examination and show about him in cross-examination. So one of the ways they're doing that is by trying to get as much of the story, the core story, told by other people as humanly possible. That's why David Pecker was on the stand for 4 days instead of half a day. That's why Keith Davis is there not just to introduce a bunch of emails and text messages that he has with Michael Cohen and with the one who, Dylan Howard, who is the witness who I most regret that because of a spinal injury in Australia, he is not going to be able to testify. A spinal injury in Australia. Look, Michael Cohen, they have thought hard about how to tell as much of this story as possible through the people who are interacting with Michael Cohen rather than through Michael Cohen himself. And by the way, ditto Stormy Daniels. You know, a significant part of the defense opening statement was all about how, you know, these are people with vendettas against Donald Trump. These people who are monetizing their hatred of Donald Trump. These are people who's built their careers, right? So the less you can rely on them, the more you take the wind out of that. And so enter David Pecker, who's awesome. Enter Keith Davidson.
Less awesome.
Right. And but that's why he got the prominence that he did. And, you know, though a lot of people in the courtroom and in the overflow room did lose the will to live over the course of his testimony today, I actually think the prosecution got a lot into the record in an essentially, well, he hasn't had a cross yet, so we don't know how impeached it will be, but in a fairly credible fashion. And what they got was, first of all, that these they got the client side of these deals. They got, which is important because the other side of the deal is now they have it from Pecker and they have it from the two women in question, or at least representatives of them. Secondly, they have a whole lot of the interactions with Michael Cohen that you're not relying on Michael Cohen for. And then third, I do think they very cleverly used this to get in the panic, the fact that with Stormy Daniels, at least, the panic of the Access Hollywood and the days before the election actually caused the payments to be made. And that's, you know, Davidson spent a fair bit of time this afternoon explaining that he was really convinced that they were going to stiff him and not pay, drag it out until after the election, and then it wasn't going to happen, and his clients would be screwed. And then Access Hollywood happened and the deal came together, right? And so I do think that that's a very important point from the prosecution's point of view. And I do think this was, as disappointed as I am in his demeanor and lack of sleaziness and boring persona, I do think that's actually a very important point for the jury.
But we did get a really great potential band name for an all for a band that potentially could come together if the Lawfare team, well, especially if the women in the Lawfare office wanted to create a band. Keith Davidson had this text to Dylan Howard in which he was talking about this deal that Stormy Daniels, was it Karen McDougal or Stormy Daniels?
It's in the Stormy Daniels part. No, it was Karen McDougal because it was ABC.
That's what it was.
So she had a competing offer from ABC and he
said something. It was supposed to be a derogatory term, but it would be reclaimed in this circumstance, in which he says the estrogen mafia is after her, talking about, you know,
she's getting heavy pressure from the estrogen mafia.
So look, but
here's the thing: like this is why I say this guy is not a good sleazeball. If you were going to use a term like the estrogen mafia in your texts, and then your big claim to fame in your life is that you have to testify about it, don't apologize.
He said he was very, own it, guys.
Just more disappointment for Ben.
David Pecker would have been bewildered
that anybody was confused or upset by it.
So I'm not going to ask Ben this question because I think Thursday Ben only has to look forward to more disappointment with the witness. Anna, what are you looking forward to on Thursday when we resume court, Ben?
Well, look, we're going to see a cross-examination of Keith Davidson, which I'm very interested to see. David Pecker's cross-examination, we were quite critical of the prosecution in their cross-examination. And so we will see how they fare in terms of Keith Davidson's. We also have more direct examination as well because the prosecution is not done, though I suspect that it won't be that much longer until they're done.
No, particularly because the end of the day, Josh Steinglass, the prosecutor who was taking the lead on this, really got his ass kicked. And he tried and tried and tried to formulate a question that would adduce from the witness a point that he really wanted the jury to hear. And I got to tell you, I could not even discern what that point was listening to watching a half hour of this over repeated objections that the judge, again, Donald Trump doesn't like this judge. This judge has been assiduously fair to Donald Trump and, you know, prevented this line of questioning over and over and over again. And it was not a good moment for the prosecution that the lead on direct examination could not formulate a question in a way that he could adduce from the witness something that he knows that the witness believed and something that I think the witness probably testified to the grand jury. And he could not figure out a way to get the witness to repeat that in a way that Justice Merchant was willing to allow. And I actually, you know, we've been kind of critical of some aspects of what Emile Bovet has done but this was not a good moment for Josh Steinglass.
No, it wasn't. I will also say that another small kind of indicator of maybe what we'll get later this week. Again, though, we don't know the order of witnesses. Even the defense team does not know the order of witnesses. So who knows? But we did hear some argument today about this question of whether or not the defense had opened the door in their opening statements to being able to allow the prosecution to introduce some evidence about, the effect that Trump had had on people like Michael Cohen or Stormy Daniels in terms of intimidation or pressure campaigns. The reason being that in their opening statements, the defense said things like, oh, Cohen was a loyal guy, then he changed his tune, that kind of thing. The prosecution had argued, well, that opens the door to us being able to present some evidence to the contrary about, you know, why it is that that maybe there was a different kind of change in Cohen's story and that kind of thing. So when that was going on, the Justice Merchant said, well, when do you need a ruling by? And at that point, the prosecution said by Thursday would be good. That could indicate, because this argument was specifically about Daniels and about Cohen, that could indicate that maybe by the end of the week we could see the start of a Cohen testimony or Daniels testimony, but again, it's unclear. We don't know the order of witnesses, so we'll see.
We shall see. We'll leave it there. Benjamin Wittes, Anna Bauer, thank you for overcoming technical difficulties, and we shall see.
So before we break, let me just say this is the editor-in-chief prerogative. Thank you all for bearing with us. We are going to figure out overnight what the technical problem was today, and we will have it resolved in time for tomorrow's 2 o'clock live stream. And in the meantime, I'm quite confident we will have acquired a Pris fucking Steen audio of this, as well as Pris fucking Steen video of this, which we will swap out the YouTube live stream with.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both his twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
Well, something, something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in
opinions.
We do that in every episode, too.
We're professional, unprofessional. So if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.